Welcome to the Sunflower Conversations, where we explore the hidden disability sunflower and its role in supporting people with hidden disabilities.
So, hey guys, my name's Paul. Also with me today is Chantelle. Hey, Chantelle.
Hello, Paul.
Good to see you. Today, we are going to be talking to Benedict Simcox and her daughter, Kez.
Hi.
Benedict is the Chief Executive of Family Voice Surrey, which we will hear more about later on. Benedict also has three children, all with invisible disabilities. And with her today is her daughter, Kez. Welcome, guys. Thank you for joining us today. Can you please introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Benedict Simcox, and I am Chief Exec of Family Voice Surrey, which is a parent carer forum we'll talk about later. But I have three young people now, offspring, who all have a variety of disabilities, most of which are invisible, some of which are less so, but there's nothing about any of them that is obvious.
I'm Kez, I'm the middle child. I'm 19, and I have all hidden disabilities, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Although the Tourette's doesn't feel very hidden to me
compared to the rest of them.
So, Kez, are you happy to sort of disclose and just talk a little bit about your hidden disabilities?
Yeah, of course. So I was diagnosed with autism first when I was about 11. And that's been my primary diagnosis pretty much forever, but is more of a secondary now. And then when I was around 16, I was diagnosed with a few other things. Could you please list them? I don't remember.
So we have
generalized
anxiety disorder, depression, eating disorder, traits of PTSD, so post-traumatic stress disorder. And then she's since developed and been diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome. Tourette's and functional neurological disorder came this year.
Yeah.
And we are waiting for a diagnosis of ADHD, which is likely to come in October.
That's amazing. So there's clearly quite a few challenges there.
I think there are challenges in that I suspect we'll kind of get a bit picture with the ADHD diagnosis, but I suspect that Kez is just neurodiverse. She's got a different brain, and that we label as autistic, ADHD, the Tourette's, the FND. Unfortunately, because the way that her brain coped was by masking when she was a little girl, which wasn't at all in her control, but she looked completely perfect to the outside world. And unfortunately, the fact that her needs weren't met early enough or appropriately enough, because we didn't fully understand what was going on, meant that she developed a raft of mental health difficulties.
Yeah.
And that's been... it's been a big part of a big, possibly I would say it's harder to deal with mental health difficulties than it is with autism or the Tourette's. The Tourette's has come on later.
Yeah, it started around when I was 14, but it only got bad. I think probably a big trigger will have been COVID.
So that your Montana, which you can explain to everybody in a moment why we're calling it Montana. And the words that you use, can you sort of predetermine them, or do they just come from somewhere and you don't know where?
Montana, which is what we call her tics, has a foul mouth.
Right.
Absolutely foul. And that's kind of developed. But then there are things where a tick can go on for a really long time, and it can sound...
they kind of trigger each other. So if I say something like half a sentence, it'll trigger the second half of the sentence. So I end up just talking and talking and talking because I've just set off like a whole series of ticks.
The thing that's harder as a mum is when she starts hitting herself or scratching. So there are times when she's got awful scabs all over her face because she scratched herself to bleeding point, or she's hit her hand on a desk so hard that she's got a bruise.
Is that like stimming, or is that completely different?
No, because I do stim and I know my stimming very well. I have a lot of tics that look like stimming, but I know that they're not, because it doesn't feel the same at all.
By being neurodiverse, do you know, guys, is it something where these conditions cross over. Is that sort of typical?
Yeah, comorbidities is what you'd call that, and it's really, really common. So I love it because I follow various Instagram pages and Tourette's pages on autism pages and Tourette's pages on Instagram. And they both talk about comorbidities and they both have like overlaps, but they talk about comorbidities within Tourette's or within autism. I'm like, I'm just a comorbid human.
In terms of diagnosis, was it something that was staggered? How did you kind of get to the point where you thought, I have this condition?
I had an awareness of autism and particularly Asperger's syndrome before I had children. I don't know where from. It was just I was aware of it. And when my eldest was a year old, I started thinking there are some things here that are a little bit peculiar. He was eventually diagnosed by CAMHS, which is the Child and Adolescent Mental Health Services, mm-hmm. when he was six. Kez was first referred to the same service when she was 4 years old, so actually at around the same time. But
they didn't want me to be autistic.
They didn't want her to be autistic. We actually, it was only when she was seven that she got, mentally she was not well at all, and she was re-referred to that service. Mm, and at that point I said, look, she needs some therapy. I know she does. Bear in mind that I think she's on the autistic spectrum based on a range of things. And all I was saying to them is, if she is, talking therapy is going to have to be approached a little bit differently, because communication is difficult when you're autistic. It's difficult. Maybe it's different is a better way of describing it. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't listen to me. And that, I think, was really frustrating, because I wasn't asking for a diagnosis of autism. I was asking for flexibility in how the therapist communicated. That went on for 2.5 years or so, not very successfully. And when we left that service, we went to see a pediatrician who within 10 minutes diagnosed Asperger's syndrome. And that has, Kez's history with mental health difficulties has meant that she's had a number of overall assessments, and every single one comes up with autism as the primary diagnosis. The other issue was that often this happens in families like ours, is that if a younger sibling presents with difficulties, mm-hmm. the professionals will...
They think that you're picking up on traits just as a younger sibling.
Yeah, they talk about learned behaviours.
Yeah.
There's a real challenge, particularly when you've got young children, where diagnosis isn't straightforward. And a lot of the professionals will say, we want to meet the need. We don't want to focus on diagnosis. The difficulty there is that for a lot of families and a lot of young people themselves, having that diagnosis, that label, allows you to understand better what's different. Kez has got to the stage where, because for years and years and years, she was told that there was nothing wrong with her, a diagnosis is actually incredibly important to her, because it's something where she can say, look, I'm not making it up. I'm not a fraud.
With a diagnosis, it means that I've made friends with Tourette's and tics, and it's made me feel a lot more like a human. And I couldn't have done that without the diagnosis, really.
I'm just interested to know how you kind of lead with your conditions. Is there one which, not trumps, but is like, you know, do you say I have comorbidities, or do you say I have autism, or do you say I have Tourette's?
I usually say I have Tourette's, because it's the only one that people can really notice. I tend to mask around new people anyway, so the autism only really comes up either if I tick it or if it's a bit annoying being told, I'm not a medical professional, but you seem like you're not autistic. Like, I've had repeatedly, because it's not just one diagnosis, I've had 3 or 4 different professionals immediately say, yeah, you're autistic, mate.
And actually, that's in, there have been periods of time through adolescence where Kez went, but I'm not autistic, they've got it wrong.
How is Tourette's perceived? How do you see people reacting to you with it?
It feels like everyone should know about it by now, because it's sort of where I live on the internet, but then I forget that not everyone lives there on the internet. So when I go out and people are like, that's really weird, I just get a bit confused.
Kez has been using the sunflower lanyard for years.
Since they started.
Yeah, since they started, really, because every now and again she would either not be able to speak, or she'd freeze up, or she'd look very anxious and something was wrong. And that just gave her a reassurance that it says to the world, kind of leave me alone or help me, but don't judge and don't get in my way.
Do you think the sunflower is needed in society?
Yeah, I love it. It's given me so much confidence. Like we were saying with Tourette's out and about, when I wear my sunflower lanyard, I also have a Tourette's action card now. I just feel a bit safer.
When I first started using the sunflower lanyard, it was with my eldest in mind, who would never touch a sunflower lanyard, let alone wear one. But if I wore it and he had a meltdown in the road, at least I had something. Even, you know that not everybody knows about it, but if they do, then there's immediately a, rather than looking at me as if I am a really, really, really bad mother, there was a kind of, often it's pity, which is never brilliant, but it's better than blame. But even if they don't, it gave me a little bit of confidence that I've done as much as I can to show to the world subtly that we're a bit different.
If there was a reaction that you got from someone from wearing a sunflower, what would it be?
The first thing that I want as a mum is not to feel blamed for what often appears inappropriate.
I'm inappropriate.
It might be that I have a child in a pushchair that looks far too old to be in a pushchair. And the amount of blame that you get in looks from people, if that's the case, in my experience, most of the time it's been disapproval. Often the best thing actually is without words, is just make eye contact. And if you can kind of telepathically go, do you need some help? That's what it is. It's about awareness. If society could have compassionate awareness of the fact that some of us have different lives, that's all we're after, really.
I'm just trying to understand just a little bit more about how you kind of deal with that on a day-to-day basis. And what is a kind of typical day like for you as a mum?
So for a start, luckily, and you know, I'm very fortunate in that I also have a lovely husband. You know, we've been together for a long time. We're a team around this. The other thing that's really important is that it's my normal. I haven't known anything else. I need it as an emotional support.
Yeah.
On a
daily, hourly, weekly basis.
Pretty much. It varies, but I think it's fair to say that they kind of all expect me to be on call at any given time.
How do you cope? Has it tested you, your mentality, you know, your mindset, your stability? It must be challenging for you as well.
I have struggled with anxiety and depression for a long time.
No, you're lying. Faking for clout. Sorry. Mum's faking her dreams.
I'm on antidepressants at the moment. Over the years, I've had a number of physical health problems. It's really, really common when you look, parent carers often have their own health issues to deal with because stuff comes out one way or the other, doesn't it? Sleep is an issue. You just get on with it, really. It's been really lovely to start working. I've been working now for the last couple of years, kind of fell into the world of work. One of the things that people often don't realise is the amount of paperwork it takes to support a child with disabilities. And that is,
that's a lot.
It's a huge amount. I think as humans, we have often more resilience than we think we do. And I think one of the big things is you have to realise that you as mum or dad are probably not going to be enough. And that's very, very hard to, number one, I'm not enough for my child. Number two, I have to ask for help, which means acknowledging that I can't do everything.
Kez, what are your hopes for the future?
I just kind of hope that I can make enough money to move out because I love my house, I love my family, I love my room. But I don't want to be 25 and still living at home.
One of the things that Kez talks about a lot is she's really passionate about raising awareness in society of minority issues, particularly disability issues. Is there some way of building on that? There must be somewhere, either in the charity sector or indeed within local authorities, a space for her to have that kind of employment that uses what is really a ridiculous amount of life experience given her age.
I can see you doing something with, like, you know, advocate policy change and, you know, helping to drive that forward. That's like, I can see you doing that, Kez.
There was one obstacle or one thing about your condition that got in the way or was the biggest thing that you face. What would that be? Is there one standout thing, like, is it your tics, for example?
No, my tics are a big one, my fatigue is a big one, and my anxiety is a massive one. Those are the three biggest.
The fatigue is the one for me that feels implacable, unchangeable and uncontrollable.
If there's any advice to someone that you want to give, and it can be to somebody experiencing the same conditions, Benedict or Kez, can you just, do you have any advice for people?
I think my advice is it'll be okay. I don't know what okay will look like for you, but it will be okay. The where do you find support? The way you do find, there's loads of things, and it will depend on the condition you're dealing with. It'll depend on your ability. It'll depend on where you are. It exists. We are actually, as much as there are issues and there's a lot to work on, actually in the United Kingdom, I think we're very fortunate. We have systems in place that should help. They don't a lot of the time, but they are at least there. Take it 5 minutes at a time, if that's all you can manage. And if you can't manage 5 minutes, go and lock yourself in the loo for 30 seconds. If you can get through 30 seconds, you can probably get through the next 30 seconds.
Mm.
Thank you. Kez, do you want to say anything, or you've all
right? Yeah, my biggest advice usually is to find community, whether you've just been diagnosed with something, or you've got a child that's been diagnosed with something, or you've got a friend who's been diagnosed with something. I would find a community and do a little bit of research, because not like excessively, because I'm a bit obsessive. That's not necessary for everyone. But having people who get it is really nice. Especially if you've been diagnosed with something, I think.
I think, Kez, you're very, very, very fortunate to have a mum like Benedict. It's been a real pleasure talking to you both. And thank you for just sharing your thoughts and, you know, having a conversation. It's been lovely. Really interesting.
Thank you very much.
Really nice to meet you, Kez.
If you'd like to share your sunflower story or conversation, please email conversations@hiddendisabilitiesstore.com. Find out more about us, or listen to this recording again, by checking out our insights page at hiddendisabilitiesstore.com. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and LinkedIn. Please help, have patience, and show kindness to others, and join us again soon. Making the invisible visible with the Hidden Disability Sunflower.